All right, so we wanted to talk about conventions because I just got back from a convention.
Yes, welcome back.
Yeah, you were wondering how it was.
Yeah, what did you do? What was your role? What did you see? What did you discover?
I organized a panel there. I did one of the programming events. I was actually surprised this particular convention, any other convention I've done in the past, they pay for your badge or they give you a free badge. This convention did not do that.
Huh. So, what, you had to, as a guest, still sort of pay for your own entry and stuff?
Yeah, that was a bit unusual. I didn't realize it at the time I applied because I just assumed.
Well, it would be humbling to anyone with a bit of a superiority complex.
I guess so. It's just that this convention is a lot more organized around cosplaying and costuming, so I was surprised. There was a lot of differences from the cons I've done in the past.
Indeed.
Anyway, I organized an animation panel and we put together me and two of my friends, we put together this big 40-minute reel of animations that are undiscovered.
Wow, so it was more like a screening session rather than a like a the you know come meet Crown Prince sort of thing.
Oh yeah, no, I don't think anybody in this particular community really knew who I
Oh,
was.
okay.
I was just trying to sort of expand my audience, but also wanted to see how if animation was a popular thing or not around there. And I was surprised because when I looked around the panels at that convention, the attendance wasn't that great, so I got really nervous because they slotted me for the last day at the same time as this major event. So I was really nervous. We were only going to get six people come or something like that. We didn't. I didn't really pay attention to how many we had, but in the end, the room was pretty much full, which was really surprising.
That's very impressive, especially considering the major event at the time. Was it like the big cosplay show at the end?
Yeah, they have a dance competition
Wow.
in costume.
And your thing wasn't really very interactive or panel-y, you say. It wasn't like a Q&A. It was just, hey, come watch an hour of stuff.
That is exactly what it was, and I put that in the description too, because I've discovered after doing these panels quite a few times that people really just want to come and see animation. The audience for who wants to learn animation is very small and specific,
Right.
and it's a lot more energizing when you get a room full of people and they're watching stuff and laughing at it and gasping or, feeling sad or whatever. That's much more fun, I think. So I just took the panel, made it 40 minutes of animation, and then the rest of it, we talked a little bit about animation. Zolaris, who's one of my 2D animator friends, and he's doing 3D now. So he explained how it works, and he had a live puppet that he was breaking on site, and people thought that was hysterical.
Cool. As in like a 3D rig and he was deliberately making it pull wacky faces and things.
Yeah, that people really liked that.
Excellent.
So it went really well. I was really nervous after seeing the energy in the room at some of these other panels was just so dead. Oh my gosh.
That can tend to happen. So for things that we might want to find, what were some of the cool cartoons that we can search for that you recommend?
Well, a lot of the stuff actually has been on Scribble Kibble, my show, in the past, but because this was a new audience, I figured none of them would really know who I was and weren't following the show, and this would all be new to them too, and that was the case.
All right, but you specifically did say undiscovered things, though. But a lot of Scribble Kibble in the past has gravitated towards independent, but still quite popular independent cartoons.
Kind of. It can be hard to tell because sometimes I'll feature a cartoon and then it will get viewed a lot afterwards.
All right. Do you feel a bit smug that you had a role to play in giving it a foothold?
I don't really feel smug. I do want to draw more attention to new or to animations that don't get attention that definitely should, because it's ridiculous that they don't. But it's not really, I don't expect that to happen. When it does, it's really great, but it doesn't always work out that way.
Wonderful. No other wacky behind the scenes stories then.
Of the convention?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, yeah, there's a ton, but it's all not really animation
Oh,
related.
go on, give us one.
All right. So I've never been to a Brazilian steakhouse before. And one of the people I've done work for in the past and who's a friend of mine now, he works sort of in IT and IT security, cybersecurity now. Anyway, he said, "Oh my gosh, you're going to this convention? I work right next to the building." And all of my coworkers talk about how weird it is that people are outside walking around in costumes. I have to pretend like I don't know what that's about either. Anyway, yeah, so he invited me to dinner with one of his other friends who drove up from Pittsburgh, I think, or something like that. And yeah, we got to eat this Brazilian steakhouse, and people walk around with these giant skewers of meat, and they come to your table and they cut a slice right there for you. You take it with these tongs, and there's 14 different cuts of meat, and they have this crazy salad bar with things like palm hearts and cactus fruits and these giant blocks of cheese that probably cost $300 each. It was a very upscale restaurant, and it was really great.
Incredible.
Oh my gosh, it was one of my favorite parts about the con. Have you ever been to any cons?
I've gone just as just to like hang out. There's only really one big one in Australia, which is called Supernova. It's sort of like the Comic-Con equivalent. And even then, it's not nearly as large as that. But I find them to be quite fun because they're divided into two main sections, which is like all the typical booths and merchandise and junk. And then there's the Artist Alley stuff. I can only assume every other convention everywhere has the same sort of thing, but it's just aisles and aisles of independent artists shipping their merchandise. And it's, I always enjoy wandering up and down those, just meeting people and having conversations and seeing what their style and what their deal is and what they like to do. And over the years, things have shifted quite a lot because it used to be very small and now it's really, really big. Like it has it. Like more space is dedicated to them than to the traditional stuff. However, also the kind of work that they produce has also shifted as well, because way back when it used to be pretty much independent stuff. Everyone was selling their own comics and their own ideas and characters and worlds and things. But now it is like 95% fan art because that sells more.
Really? Oh my gosh. See, this con has a rule that you're not allowed to do fan art or sell fan art, which is fantastic because I've only ever been to the conventions that are like what you're describing, 95% fan art.
Yeah, to have it as a rule. That's interesting.
Yeah, this con is 100%, or, I mean, maybe 95% original art because there are kind of ways to sneak around the rule, but very few people do it. So it's amazing. You can walk around the vendor area and the artist alley and it's all original stuff and characters and examples of the other characters for other people they've drawn and whatever.
Yeah, I'd love to see that. To be encouraged to explore new IPs and maybe pick out a comic or two that you haven't read before, because yeah, I know I pretty much only gravitate towards the fan art stuff as well because of they make good gifts. Oh, here's someone I know who likes Pokemon. I'll get him a little key ring or whatever.
Yeah, it's kind of a tough game. We're going to end up start talking about fan art versus original art, because even when it's not fan art, like these people at this con that I went to all have a shared interest in like animal cartoons and stuff. So, you know, if the person likes wolves or if they like cats, then that's much wider than just, oh, they like Pikachu. So there's still lots to choose from.
Huh.
Anyway, the dynamic was so different. And it's funny that you mentioned the Artist Alley, because up until this convention, I'd never seen one before.
Really? Okay, because you mentioned it very casually before. It was like, okay, it was redundant for me to bring that up because I guess every convention has that sort of thing. But my experience is so limited.
Yeah, I've only really been to Brony and comic conventions, and I'd never seen, and I'd been to one video game convention, so obviously really the only way to see art is to go around and look at the video games.
Oh, right.
And they didn't have an artist alley, or really the vendor area is mixed in with the showroom floor, so it's a mix of video game merchandise, and you can play this new video game that's going to come out.
Okay.
Yeah, so the Artist Alley thing was new to me.
It's fun, isn't it? I know a bunch of people that they sort of like live on the circuit and they move around from convention to convention, and all the time in between they spend just all their spare time building the next set of stuff. And it's interesting how they're able to build their own little fan bases and communities in of that. She's like, oh, I need to go and see what this person is producing this year, because it's always different. They don't just sell the same thing every time. It's almost like in seasons. So they put a lot of work and thought into it. Even if it is like just fan art, like that's a way to get new people in. And then I find that they start to introduce more original stuff again once they have a recognizable audience, because they recognize the same person every year.
It's funny you mention that, because that's usually what I suggest to people when, if they ask, well, how do I get more people to look at my stuff? I tell them to draw fan art. because that's what will bring people in, and then you introduce them to the original stuff.
Mm.
It's only a certain percentage of your viewership that's going to go to the original stuff, but I promise you it's a lot higher than nobody.
Yeah, that's a good thought. I've not really dabbled in it too much myself, but I remember ages ago, like before I had like become a proper animator, I did like a Zelda one just for fun. But also as a bit of an experiment, being like, okay, if I kind of half-ass this, how well is it going to do just banked on the fact that it is Zelda? I think it's still like my most viewed independent cartoon ever. Oh, well. But then again, I haven't tried producing anything original in a very, very long time because it's all about the tutorials these days.
It's all about the tutorials now. Lots of tutorials. But you're making the game now, so that's not exactly true.
Oh, yeah, that's true. The game's happening. Sorry, I haven't touched it in a couple of days because I've had to catch up on regular video content. So it's like I've already forgotten that it's there.
But that's all original. That's, you could have made a game that's like, and here's the Link character that you walk around and it is Link.
I suppose.
You could have gone that route.
It's got dungeon crawling elements to it, but no, I mean, like, you've got... Everybody has ideas on how to like make a thing, and like if you don't, shut up, you do, because everyone has critiques on films and games that they think could be better. Like, those discussions are endless. Oh, this film's so bad, if only they did this. So everyone knows, like, kind of in their heart, oh, this is what I would like to see. And rather than like critiquing a film or a game that you don't like, you could just, that same thought, that same energy is just like, okay, well, this is what I want to see from a film or a game or whatever, but I'm clearly not seeing it because I'm frustrated that I'm not seeing it. Well, there you go. Now you know what you need to make.
That's a really good way to put it, actually. Yeah.
So that's sort of what I'm trying to do with this, because I have those thoughts all the time. And now that I am making this game, and I've spent so much energy focusing on the mechanics, because, you know, the gameplay is the most important thing. But there is room to tell a story within it. And I'm sort of shocked that I've already started main production and realized that there isn't really one yet. And I'm sort of been passing it on, just being like, oh, I don't really need to worry about it. Mechanics are the most important thing. But then I thought, well, hang on. They're like, why? Everyone wants the opportunity to tell a story like this, but they never do. So why would I pass it up just because, I don't know. That's been happening.
What kind of story is it? Action, adventure, drama, horror, cute?
Well, it's still very up in the air because it's
okay.
It's early days. I'm sort of just writing down the different directions that it could go in based upon the framework of what of how you traverse this world, and also the structure of it. It like, should it just be one overarching thing, or should it be a series of chapters based on the like the levels, like should each level be its own story connected by like a hub one? Maybe something should happen in the first level that sets up a sequence of events that you don't fully deal with until the last one. I'm not certain yet.
That's just story structure, because even if you say it is an overarching story, then you do still have the chapters within it. Either way, you know, whether or not you want to cram the chapters into levels or break them up by level is sort of your choice, I guess.
Yeah. So I'm not going to be able to put my foot down on it until I've got a working prototype and I can actually start assembling levels and start playing them and being like, okay, this is how you're traveling and exploring. So then I can start to, you know, because I've got like pages of different story notes. But when I can actually start playing it, then I'll be like, okay, this thing's appropriate. This isn't appropriate. I don't want to get too in love with one particular idea and then realize that the mechanics don't allow for it later.
Oh, okay. All right. I was thinking more, I guess, cutscene type of thing where the mechanics wouldn't really matter because you'd have the cutscene that tells the part of the story. But yeah.
Well, when cutscenes play is determined on how the mechanics work as well. Because that could just be, you know, once at the end of a level. But what if there turns out to only be, like, three really big levels?
Oh, I see what you mean now.
What if I put a cutscene when you pick up every individual item?
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Forced action animation you have to sit through that's 30 seconds long and is the same every time.
Mm. There's so many different ways you can go. And the other general rule, like you've heard show don't tell when it comes to film. Games are sort of another level where it's do don't show. So if it's possible to demonstrate the story simply through walking around and seeing things without having to rely on cutscenes at all, then that's usually a better option. Like you just sort of feel the atmosphere a bit more.
You put the puzzle together yourself in your head. There's a lot of games like that that are really great.
Pretty much, yeah, yeah. So cutscenes are more just going to be like, the way I see it at least, just that little bit of extra boost, being like, yeah, you did a thing.
Yeah. I mean, when I was a kid, I always played the video games for the cutscenes.
Depends on the games, though, doesn't it?
I guess so, but I always liked games with stories.
Yeah, but it really does depend on the game itself, because like if it has really long-winded cutscenes that are like basically a movie and are really good, and the gameplay in between is sort of lame and only goes for a few minutes, then you'd be like, well, why am I playing this? I just want to watch the movie. And then there's the opposite as well. Like, if the story is being told through gameplay really, really well, sometimes cutscenes sort of halt the action. If you're able to sort of tell your own story through your own actions, a cutscene sort of railroads you to one particular plot.
Yeah, okay. So you haven't quite figured all that stuff out yet.
I think it's starting to head in the right direction now, but like I said, there's only so much I can do as like the artist. The code needs to be at a particular point where I can start Legoing levels together and experiment with different layouts. You know, because at first it was only going to be like corridors, just moving down paths and, oh, do I go left? Do I go right? But then when we started putting together the first concepts of how the code will structure it, it allowed for open plan levels. So, you know, you could be like in an open field somewhere. I was like, oh, I didn't even think of that.
Hmm.
So that can open up different potential as well. So like I said, I don't want to railroad myself to a particular script if it turns out that I can build worlds that I didn't think before possible.
And the whole reason we ended up talking about this is because obviously animation and storytelling are one and the same. I mean,
yes. Okay. That's a good idea for a next episode we should just talk about telling stories through your individual movements.
Yeah, because that's what I mean when I say that they're the same thing. If your animation needs to tell a story, so even simple things like walking, that's just what I was telling my student this morning. Even stuff like walking can have a completely different attitude just by changing a few small things. So each movement should be telling a story. And yeah, you don't want to just be wasting your time on sort of bland, you know, basic character, player one type movements.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's something very important to keep in mind as well, especially in larger productions where, you know, if you're one of 30, 40 animators, you don't really get any say in the overarching story. The script is done. Storyboard is done. You don't really get any influence on it. But as just the animator of that one scene, it can be surprising how much flexibility there is in taking the keys from a storyboard and transitioning between those two keys in a very elaborate way to act.
Yeah, oh, I'm really excited now because it's all about the breakdown. Yeah, sure, they bend over to pick up the pencil, but what happens on the way there? I mean, anything could happen.
Yeah. are you going to that example from the survival kit there where he bends down to pick up the chalk?
I just had it open a couple hours ago. That's why I was thinking of it. But
oh, that's funny. I was reading that chapter yesterday.
Oh, okay. This is really weird now.
Well, I mean, that everyone leans on that book. It's like the spine of our entire community.
Yeah, but like coincidentally, I haven't opened it in months. I mean, we both opened it yesterday to look at that specific, or today in my case, to look at that specific example.
Well, okay, the reason for that, and this bridges the last couple of topics we're talking about, was because I did start doing a cutscene for the game recently.
Mm-hmm.
But it is rare that I do character animation, and I struggled. And I was like, I think I've forgotten some really basic techniques. So I went back to the book to try and relearn them again. And yeah, it was a bit of a mind blow.
Yeah, that particular book shows all the different ways you could just mess with things from between one key and the other. So yeah, I guess you do have a lot of flexibility, even if you're animating keys.
Well, even if you're just the in-betweener, there's more flexibility than you think. Or at least there's more responsibility than you'd probably think. And again, in that book, it shows off some of the obvious examples, like a footstep. Like the in between is like, oh, if you do it bad, it's sort of just floating in the middle, and then the right one, it has, you know, the heel tilting up.
The contact.
Yeah, yes. The contact. But it really depends on the production, doesn't it? Because apparently ones like The Simpsons are just very railroaded. Like everything down to the blink is planned out in the X sheet. So you get pretty much no leeway if you're in the production team for that, like down the pipeline.
I don't know. I think the days of X sheets were a little bit different because you couldn't live edit things the way you can now.
I think this might be going up until now-ish. I know they use Toon Boom now, but not much more beyond that, so don't quote me on it. But it would explain why things are a little bit more rigid now. I think we've actually covered, I've covered everything I want to say about that.
Yeah, this is a good stopping point for this episode. And I want to say what we're going to talk about next, but it never seems to actually happen. We were thinking about talking about staying focused on a personal project, speaking of working on the game and these other things. So we'll see if that happens or not.
Yeah, or one of the ones we have highlighted here is when to give up on an idea.
Yeah, that one too. So those are the two topics we're looking at for the next episodes, is staying focused and also quitting. Sort of two opposites. So yeah, bye everyone.